Boiler Room Suite. This is Rex Dreverall. So what made you decide to do this play? Was it because of the cast? Like, you knew who you were going to have in the roles?
Our season is decided in a variety of different ways, and on this occasion, I can remember some of the early discussions. We operate as an ensemble in so many ways, and this is just one of them, in that we have an ensemble member will come forward and say, hey, I think we should all have a look and a read of this script. This is one I'm really passionate about. I think we should maybe think about this one. Yeah. And that's exactly how Boiler Room Suite landed on our plates. I think it was Alan Sapp who first raised it as something he'd wanted to do for a long time. He'd known about it for ages. And in fact, the copy of the script that we all read was a dog-eared paper thing from I don't know when. Rex wrote this back in the late 70s. I don't know if it was one of the original copies.
Right.
So, we all sort of read this dog-eared copy and passed it around from one to the other. And we had, all had quite strong reactions to it and favorably, and thought this would be a really good fit for this ensemble. So that's some of the early discussions around why we chose that. Yeah.
Okay, and this is a pretty intense story. It's a three-hander. Like, it's only three people in the play.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the work goes to two characters.
That's right.
Aggie and Sprug. So one was I'm dying to see this. One was an actress, one was a poet. So I'm guessing in the text, I'm guessing they rewind a lot, because homeless people have a tendency to live a lot in the past.
That's true. I think what they do is they get together, take refuge on a freezing cold winter night, and I see it's starting to snow out there, so it's...
Well, we're right in the heart. Like,
very
right
timely.
I just remember a guy from the Walper years ago telling me that some homeless people actually sleep down, like he took pity on them or he felt bad for them. They sleep in the hallways downstairs because they're warm.
Yeah, well, and that's what this boiler room provides for them, is refuge from the freezing cold in the first instance. But it's a place where these two, and they're not long friends, they've just met. And so it's this lovely thing where they're getting together, taking refuge. We don't know a lot about why they first come together. I think we hear a little bit about that. But mostly they're just these two folks that get together. And yes, we've got Sprug, the failed poet, and Aggie Rose, the failed actress. And they, philosophize and they live out their fantasies. I think those are the flashbacks you might be referring to. And they're delightful to watch, and heartbreaking and funny and sad.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And it's a huge role for each of these two characters, because the lights go up at the top of the show and they're there on stage every minute of the act.
Yeah.
And then the second act is the same. Although I don't want to give too much away, there is a third person in the script, but it's always nice to leave the audience guessing about who that is and why do they show up and when. So I won't say more about that.
Okay. Yeah, and this is like a marathon for those two. But, I've seen Kathleen's work for years and George's work for years, and they are veterans.
Two fantastic veterans with so much stage experience between them. It doesn't even feel like an effort from them,
Did Richard ask George? Like, did he have George in mind for this role or not?
Again, the way we cast these pieces, we often will look at a piece, and first and foremost, of course, we look around at our own ensemble. We're 10 in the ensemble right now.
Yes.
And not surprisingly, we look to see if any of us fit, or if the director, whoever's chosen to direct, feels that we're a good fit. And then inevitably, though, we'll cast outside. And so sometimes we cast in a variety of ways. We either sometimes think, this is a great thing for this person, and we've worked with this person before, why don't we go to them first? Other times we'll actually have an open call or a semi-open call where we actually invite a group of artists in and we audition them that way. So on this occasion, I wasn't really privy to those original discussions. I know that we were excited to get George back in with us. Those of us who have worked with him in the past at Theatre & Company.
Yeah, he did work at Theatre & Company and did some amazing stuff there. And he's worked all across Canada, actually. He's quite the guy. And Kathleen as well. So every once in a while, she gets to bite her teeth into these roles. And as of late, she's getting more of those types of roles. Like, it's amazing. There's something else that is going on with this show, and it's very timely, and that's radical hospitality. It's kind of weird, last couple of months, Out of the Cold there's six churches that have pulled out of the Out of the Cold program. So, I already know the answer to this question, but where did radical hospitality originate?
Radical Hospitality is a venture that we first heard about it through a theater company in Minneapolis called Mixed Blood Theater. And Kathleen Sheehy was the one to first bring it to our attention. And, you know, at a time when, like every theater company, we're just struggling to get people into the house to see the shows. And, you know, you can tear your hair out about this. I mean, I'm producing this show, so this is primarily my job on this show, right? Set the budget, find the people on the team, and market this show.
Yeah.
So right now I feel pretty versed in how difficult it is to get the word out about a show, to compete with all the other great arts things that are happening in this community, competing with Netflix and movie theaters, all of those sorts of things, right? And how people spend their entertainment dollars. And so that is definitely a struggle. But the genesis to the Radical Hospitality idea really was back to bare bones for us, and it was this idea of, why are we doing this? None of us are doing this for the big bucks, because tragically there aren't any.
Having run a theater company,
you know,
a producer and a promoter. I know
for
exactly
sure, like this, none of us do this for the money.
No, we do it for
the work. We do it for the passion that we feel for the art that we're creating, and we believe, like we at Lost and Found, we think that we're creating great art, and we think we're telling great stories.
Yes.
And we just want our houses to be full of people.
Yes.
And so, it's time or money with everyone, right? And I don't know how we handle the time question, although sometimes we spend a lot of time thinking about that. But the money issue, we thought, if finances are a barrier to people to come and see our shows, then we wanted to remove it. And we were so inspired by this company in Minneapolis and what they were doing, and we thought, let's try it. Let's just step out in faith and think that if we can create barrier-free theater from a financial point of view, that is, that people can, if they're having a hard month or a hard week, or they're perpetually in a state where spending these kinds of dollars for their entertainment just is not feasible, we want to remove that barrier in the hopes that ultimately it will expand our audience base, that ultimately others might come on side with us and say, this is a fantastic idea. You know what? I'm financially in a position to support you even more than just buying a ticket for myself. And maybe we will, at the end of the day, not see too dramatic a difference in our box office intake. That is our hope. Apparently, the Minneapolis company has had a similar experience, and that's very encouraging to us. But it's one of those endeavors, I think, where we need to take a bit of a long view, if we can afford to take the long view, in the hopes that this is what we're ultimately going to see. We just want our audience base to expand. We have such a core of really, really strong, loyal supporters. But it's a small core.
Yeah.
And for any company to exist, it kind of needs to grow.
I know. So you've had a Radical Hospitality night already. Mm-hmm. How did it go?
You know what? It was super fun. I have to say, we had no idea. You know, it was a Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday night, never necessarily a great night to get people out to theater. And it was our first performance. We were going to keep the doors locked to the outside till 7:15, just in case there were hordes waiting outside. It's a really intimate space, as you know, in the theater.
Yeah,
there actually are only 70 seats available every night.
Yes.
So, and we had a few who had gone ahead and reserved their seat by paying online, so we had to leave space for them. But anyway, we opened the doors, and it kind of was fun to see. It felt like there was kind of a surge of people swarming in. And the best part, for me personally, was barely recognizing anyone. And
exactly.
I was really excited about that.
You're getting, and this is a trend I'm noticing with everybody I've interviewed lately in theater. You're getting audiences coming out to theater that don't usually see theater. And that's the audience that people want.
There was the odd soul who came in and said, no, I'm here to pay. Which kind of, I almost felt choked up about it. I mean, we were more than happy to give away every single seat that night, to fill the house. And we actually did not fill the house. So our next Radical Hospitality is tomorrow at 2 o'clock, Saturday matinee at 2 o'clock. And I hope it's fuller, to be honest. But anyway, it was when these people came in and said, no, I understand I can go for free, but I'm fine. I'd like to buy a ticket. There weren't that many, and that was okay. We didn't have any expectations either way, but it was kind of nice.
I think you're going to have a really good run.
I have a very good feeling
about that. A very good run. People will, this is not the type of show that people go away and go, where do you want to go for coffee? This is the type of show that stays with you. And it's right there in your face, because you're going to be walking down the street after the show and you're going to see someone that could have been, that it's not authentic, they could have been in the show.
I know. It would be, I mean, it's you know, the issue of homelessness in our region is a huge one, and it's true that it's easy to just kind of walk by, avert your eyes, walk more quickly. Aggie Rose's story, Sprug's story, they're heartbreaking and empowering somehow too. There are things, Sprug in particular, that he talks about, and you just think, smart guy and a man of faith in a lot of ways, and how did you get here? And yeah, like so many of the shows that I think we do, you know, I think it leaves you with something to talk about.
It does.
Sure.
And a lot of people in this country are two steps away from that, with the working poor and higher prices and the food bank intake just increasing year after year.
Yeah. Can I tell you, this space, I mean, KW Little Theater, it's a lovely place. The Little Theater people have been generous hosts to us. But we were a little bit concerned, frankly, because it only seats 70. And was that going to be a problem for us in terms of trying to meet our financial needs, right? But what a perfect space for this particular story. Because the audience literally climbs down into the boiler room with these actors. And it's so intimate. You are right there with them.
Yeah.
It's been perfect.
Do you guys have a Q&A afterwards? After the show?
You know what? Tonight, Friday night, we have a Q&A with the actors. They'll stay on and have a chat. Tomorrow night, Saturday, is very exciting because Rex Devereaux himself is going to be in the audience.
Okay.
And he's going to stay for a Q&A afterwards. Sunday matinee, this Sunday, we have groups from the House of Friendship. And
when Kathleen first told me about this show, I thought, oh, this is perfect. Like, this is
so
this
timely.
Is relevant.
Yeah.
Well, it's what Stuart used to say in the days of theater and company. This is actually relevant theater. This is something that people can relate to every day. I wanted to ask you, you're also an actor yourself.
Yes, I am.
And you're in Caribou Magi and also on Golden Pond.
Yes,
which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
Most
recently with Lost and Found, I did How It Works last year.
Oh,
playing Christine.
Yeah.
And also when we did On the Inside, played the Governor's Wife, Olive McKelvey, which was a brand new piece, historic. The Kitchener region really got behind that piece as well, which was great. Yeah.
How did you get involved with Lost and Found?
My connection began with Nicole. It began with Nicole Lee Quinnell, and then after that, Richard. Richard and Nicole were gracious enough to come out and do some training for a drama group that I was working with, and I hired them to come in and do some stuff, and that's how we kind of got connected. And I've only lived in this region since 2002 to 2003. And so that was right around the time Lost and Found Theater was starting. So I kind of never really was part of the theater and company crowd.
Yeah.
But I started seeing Lost and Found Theater's productions from the very beginning and was a huge fan of the work that they did. So I guess just over the years we worked together in various ways, and then, and then I had an opportunity to audition for them, and I kind of went from there.
Okay.
As producer on this show, I've seen this, and this is not the first show with Lost and Found I've been producer, but I get pretty emotional, actually, about how sacrificially people are prepared to work for us. You know, we want to provide work for artists in the region as either actors on stage or designers behind the scenes or what have you, stage managers. Like, we want to provide work for people who are in this business. And, you know, we struggle with every penny that we spend, and we're just always so amazed and gratified when people are prepared to, frankly, come on board for way less than they're worth.
Yeah,
and we do the best that we can every time, but it's contract by contract, and I just am always blown away by people's willingness to roll up their sleeves either and pretty much work in a volunteer capacity or just very sacrificially.
That's very true. What would you like audiences to take away with them from this show in particular?
I think first and foremost for people to come to the show and say, wow, this was a powerful story and this has really made me think. And yes, it's made me think about who are these people walking the streets and sleeping on the streets at night, and what are their backgrounds, or what might their backgrounds be? Might they be similar to Aggie and Sprug's stories? I think that I'd also love people to go away thinking, I love the work that Lost and Found Theater does. I can't help it. I'm just really hoping that this might be the show when we take on a whole host of new audience members who fall in love with the sorts of stories that we tell and say, you know what, the next show comes up, I've never heard of the play, but that doesn't matter. It's Lost and Found, so I'm going.
Well, thank you so much. I wish you all the best, and I can hardly wait to see this show.
Thanks. It'll be great to have you.
Shadows far from where the money flows. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Forgotten people lay down their heads, the distant memory of soft, soft, warm bed. People we've learned to ignore, forgotten people are friends before, friends before. We walk right by. Crying, we just need to hear.